next year's my 35th year, so I can get some lame-ass trinket.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are going to talk about our time at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival and how and why it is coming to an end. Womp womp.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey!
And Molly Glover.
Wine.
As in, she has been drinking wine.
Oh, good. I have, and I will continue to do so.
And the reason for that is because we're talking about the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
Yes.
Which, hey.
It has started. By the time this episode goes up, it will have started. We will have worked through a couple of weekends. Maybe we will have seen you out there. And if so, we are glad to have seen you. If not, we hope perhaps we will see you.
You should come out this year.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about why coming out to see us this year is important, if the Renaissance Festival is where you typically encounter.
Even if it's not. If you've always thought, man, I wish I should go to the Renaissance Festival sometime because I could see my favorite podcast hosts. This is the year.
This is the year because... we might as well just come out.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So Nick and Molly are not coming back next year. This is their last year. I am going to be there for two more years.
This year and another one.
This year and another one. Vilification Tennis, which we've talked about a lot in the past. It is our final year.
Yep.
At the Renaissance Festival.
30 years.
We are not shutting down Vilification Tennis, but we are shutting it down at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
In fact, I'd say we're shutting down the part of Vilification Tennis that is like the most pain in the ass in the sense of like getting, because it stops our BLB show.
And it's the most restrictive.
When we
do the show at MRF, there is a structure that we kind of have to stick to, because one of the things about Minnesota in specific, and I think Renaissance festivals in general, but is that the audience really goes for that thing that they can only see once a year, and they want it to be the same.
Yes.
Which is why, really interestingly, you know, we can do the same jokes at Minnesota Renaissance Festival that we've done for 10 years, and the audience loves it because they only hear those jokes once a year.
Yeah.
Right.
Some of them. There are some that come to every show.
It's true.
But at the BLB, we really have to work in new material because... they want new material.
In fact, we have prided ourselves on doing our monthly shows at the BLB. And I say we because I mean Tim, friend of the show, Eric Knight, who is the assistant director, and Nick and I are directors of cast development. And the four of us, plus we've added on Duck Washington, who's also a friend of the show, and Eric Thompson as new cast directors. But we, especially the four of us here, have worked really hard to make this show at the Bryant Lake Bowl something fantastic and something that is worth seeing, that is different every time.
Not to imply that it wasn't worth seeing before, but we want it to be worth seeing every time.
That you could come every month and you would feel like you were getting your money's worth, but also that you were seeing something new, that we do improv. We do all sorts of stuff that our Vilification Tennis Renfest audience has no idea we do.
The last 2 years we've done a musical show where we've actually written music for the show and done like an opening number at the beginning of the show.
There are people out there, Tim and Nick, who think that Molly Glover does Vilification Tennis fully clothed all the time.
Fools,
I say.
What are they thinking? So, come to the
Bryant Lake Bowl.
Come to the Fuck 2018 show, and I guarantee you that you will...
you'll see a lot of Molly in a little clothes.
And more every year, honestly, really.
Yeah.
For a couple reasons.
You really try to step it up every year.
Class it down. Step it up.
Also,
The other show that Molly and I are in, Wise Fools Improv, is also going to be done at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
After this year.
We're looking into doing shows outside of the festival or at other smaller festivals, but that Wise Fools won't be at Minnesota.
Our goal is to eventually have a monthly improv show for Wise Fools that happens somewhere, but we haven't found a venue yet that's open, available for that yet.
Yeah, and it's tricky in the Twin Cities because it's a short-form improv show, and a lot of short-form goes through a couple of theaters.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not something you can do at huge because short-form isn't their thing.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I hope you find a place to do it.
I think we will.
Yeah, I'm sure we got a lot of good options out there.
And Eric Thompson, aforementioned friend of the show, is our director, and he's a great producer on top of being a good director. So he's got a lot of good contacts.
So and then the Dregs are going to be out at festival for the next 2 years, it looks like. And we're not going to call it quits as a band. At least that's not our plan. But you never know. I mean, we might have five new members by then. But
I mean, statistically,
the only one who's going to be left is me. I'm not going to quit, but everybody else might.
You and seven guitarists.
And we do. And if you're going to come out and watch us this year, I have to say that we have a new CD called Dregnado. And it's going to be...
Weird. Why did you call it Dregnado there, Tim?
Because it has the song Sharknado on it.
Oh.
And so it's great. It's a really, really...
The cover...
Dregnado!
The cover is like a hilarious Photoshop disaster. I mean that in a good, flattering way.
It's
literally a disaster that has been Photoshopped.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a cyclone.
So that's something to come and check out. That's something that I'm excited about with this year. I think what a lot of people who don't work at the festival do, and I know there are a lot of people who listen to this podcast who know what the festival's like, but I think the important thing to understand, and I don't want to name names because somebody will sue us, the owner of the festival is a toxic human being.
He is a villain.
Yeah.
He is
like a cartoon villain.
He is one of these people who will always look to exploit the people that work for him because he knows that we all do this thing ultimately because we love doing this thing.
He has literally said, "You can pay them half. They love doing it, and they'll bitch a lot, but they'll eventually just do it."
If he had been born like 100 years earlier, he's the guy that wouldn't spend the like $2 to put a finger guard on the machinery to save the child workers from losing a hand. He's like, "Well, wait a minute. How much is the finger guard? And how many hands do we lose a week? Nah, don't do it. Don't do it."
They keep making more children, don't they?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what, are people going to stop fucking? There'll be more kids.
And he's not wrong because there's this.
People do fuck.
Gravy train. No, that's true. There's this gravy train of new performers that come into the festival every year who are just like, "Oh my God, this is the most amazing experience I've ever had."
I was once one of them.
Yeah.
As a grown ass adult in my 30s, I was one of the people that was like, we had a volunteer contract our first year, and it was like, this is everything I've ever wanted. I wanted to work out at the Renaissance Festival since I was 9 years old.
There's real, live, metaphorical magic.
Yes.
I've often joked, it's the most rewarding work I've ever done in my life, just not financially. And I still believe that in a lot of ways. It's been super rewarding, but I can't put up with all the other parts.
There's a level, I mean, it's a euphoric experience, but the thing is that when you get to the point where that toxicity, and this year for a lot of reasons, and again, I don't know that we want to go through them in too much detail on the podcast,
right,
but that toxicity, you're either shielded from it a little bit, like I'm shielded from it because I do my drag shows at the pub and I have a great time with that, and what's going on outside that pub and what's the way that they're screwing over performers doesn't affect me.
You've been there a long time too.
Yeah.
And so at this point, your bona fides are in place. No one's really going to fuck with Tim Wick. You've probably been on the short list to be the entertainment director before. There's a lot of, like, you've got a lot of gravitas with your name and with your persona. You are not just someone, you're not just a performer, Tim, to be perfectly honest. Like, you are Tim Wick, and it's a big deal.
That's awesome, and it's not the way I think of myself.
I know it's not, but I'm just saying, like, out there, there's people
who... He thinks of himself as bigger and better.
Goddamn right.
Know about you, know of you, who have never spoken to you.
I think of myself as Tim fucking Wick. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, and I know that. I've been out there for a long time, and I've done a lot of things, and I have some accomplishments, and that's awesome, and I feel really good about that. But that has allowed me to be shielded from the toxicity. But the thing is that this year that shield has kind of gone.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. And it's not any one person being gone.
No. Nope.
It is that the owner has inserted himself into the process in a way that is difficult for everyone.
Yeah.
From my understanding, because we started in 2012. Prior, even just to 2012, he was a lot more hands off. And it was the launch of things, of attractions like the mermaids and now the zip line and the princess
Bow Blast.
And all the stuff that he, for me, a big part of it, of why we're leaving, because it's, people are always like, oh, what's different? You're not really getting paid less? Like, no, we're getting paid the same. Like, oh, what's the, are the hours different? Like, nope, hours are the same. Expectations are the same. The difference for me is I have now seen year after year that there is no investment in infrastructure.
Right.
That there is no investment in your human resources. They're not treated as human resources. We're treated as like, almost like we should be lucky to be there.
And you know, and I agree. And I mean, and it's always been that way, but it's becoming worse as we approach a time when the festival is going to move.
Yeah.
But because the festival is going to move, they've invested nothing in this space that we're in, which you can almost understand. We're not for the fact that none of the stakeholders in the move have had any input into it.
Right.
You know, not the crafters who are going to have to move their booths to the new space, not the entertainers who are going to have to work out there, not even the big name acts like friend of the show, Ron Bauman and the Tortuga Twins.
Right.
You know, they're going to show up and they're going to have a new stage. And what's that stage going to be like? It's not like anybody who's making these decisions has any artistic knowledge to know how to construct a stage for a single act or a stage that the entire Renaissance Festival literally is. I mean, the entire Renaissance Festival is a stage.
True. And
there is nobody involved in this process who is planning that stage. But that aside, the thing that really bothers me, and the thing that should honestly bother anybody who listens to this, is there's clearly no interest in investing in the audience.
No.
And these are the people that are spending their money on your attraction. And our parking situation has gotten worse and worse and worse. And the only thing they do is add dusty school buses for our customers who are paying $20 fucking.
Yeah. $25 this year.
$25 to ride to and from their car. Muddy parking lot with nobody there to help you if your car gets stuck, which it will if it's raining, and just this constant, you know, and the prices for the food going up while the quality of the food goes down, and this constant feeling that there is nobody involved in the upper echelons of management who view their audience as important.
And what's amazing to me is that the directive from the owner to the entertainment management, which has changed over hands several times now, in the last year, has been to reduce the number of entertainers who have hat pass, who have the ability to solicit tips. Because one of the things that people, patrons, audience, complain about when they write letters and when they complain is that it seems like everybody has their hand out, which bothers them because they're already paying exorbitant ticket prices, high prices for food, high prices for, you know, Michelob Light, you know, and high prices for even just water and things like that. And so the owner's thoughts on that are, oh, well, take away the money from the entertainers.
Not they wouldn't have their hands out if I paid them.
Or not, well, if it tipping a dollar to a free show that you watched for half an hour feels like a burden, maybe it's because stuff's too expensive here.
Right.
Like, it's never that. It's never that.
It's always
fuck the entertainers and make them pay them less, make them not get tips.
Right.
Fuck the workers. Because
the
really,
workers,
I mean,
in general,
from our perspective, like, we're all in entertainment. And so, like, obviously that's our perspective. But, I mean, if you look at, like, the people that they bring in to do all the trash. That's volunteer groups.
That's
like a the food.
That's like a they'll get like a group of Boy Scouts to come and do it as a charity project.
And they will make less than minimum wage and because it's charity.
Right. In the festival, and the festival gets to say, here's your $100 for your combined, 160 hours of labor, and not as a group, but total as a group. And then they get to write that off because they're making a donation.
Yep.
They're not paying an employee.
And they don't pay taxes on it.
And they don't, right. And that is... That they got away with that for the trash kids. That sounds bad. They got away with it with the people that pick up the trash. They're starting to get away with it for other jobs and other tasks.
Food and parking.
There are games there that are run for charity where the people that run a game booth are running it as a charity.
Yeah, I mean, here's a detail for you. All right, if you've been to the festival, there's something called the Stocks. And I can talk about this because we were asked to run the Stocks at one point.
Yep. Yes, this is actually Nick, and this was going to be Nick's and my joining the festival.
It was your entry point to
this
the festival.
This was going to be our entry point.
Only I negotiated, and anyway, so
we got a much better deal out of it.
We did.
The Stocks are a stage where people are brought up to the stage and put into the Stocks, and they do this little show.
If you're not sure what Stocks are, it's that thing where you put your head through the hole and your hands through the hole, and you got to stand there on the board.
Right. Yeah. They have one of them in Disney World.
Yep. It's not for Nazi crimes.
No, it's weird. It's weird. So when they accept the tips, all right, the festival takes 40% of the tips. And you're going to ask yourself, okay, well, why that?
The money that's paid. Because it also costs money.
No.
Well, you can pay however much you want.
Oh, you can.
So you can hold, if you hold up $5,
you can
hold up and say $5 to put my friend in the Stocks.
Okay.
And then somebody else can say, well, I'll give you $10 to put the asshole who just put up $5. So they try to get bidding wars.
Gotcha.
To get more money.
So it's all considered tips.
It's all considered tips. So whatever money they get, they have to pay 40% of it to the festival. And the festival says basically it's because they're providing you with a stage. Now, they provide the dregs with a stage and they don't take a dime of our tips. But for whatever reason, the Stocks, they take 40% of their tips. In addition, the people who run the Stocks are responsible for taxes on the money that they collect. Mm-hmm. And they are responsible for insurance because they bring people up on stage. And if you're bringing somebody up on stage, you're responsible for insurance.
You have to pay
additional insurance.
You have to buy liability insurance.
You have to buy liability insurance.
For yourself and your crew.
And liability insurance is not crazy expensive. But the fact is, because the festival is saying this is our stage you're using, they should be responsible for that liability insurance themselves. But they're not.
Nope.
They make the people who are in the Stocks pay that. So that's 60% of what they do, they get to keep, and 40% they have to give to the festival. So out of every $10, the festival gets $4. And the
for
Stocks,
doing nothing.
For doing nothing.
Literally nothing.
They don't write the scripts.
Nope.
They don't do the performance.
They don't hire the people.
They find one person who says, I will run. Yeah. Oh, they don't even mention it.
They don't advertise it.
They literally all they say is, well, we get people through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you should give us money. To which the response is, the people who came through the door already gave you fucking money. But anyway, another thing, if you've brought kids to the Mermaid Cove.
Oh my God, I heard about this. I got so mad.
The mermaids are tipped. They have tip jars. And I realize some people don't like the fact that everybody gets tipped. But here's the point. They aren't paid very well.
No.
None of us are paid very well.
I will tell you this. We had a thread recently where we all talked about how much we get paid. This is not everyone, but I'm 70 to 75% of the respondents on the thread, and it was about 100 people, make less than prison wages.
Yeah.
Even I
make less than prison wages.
Yeah.
And I do pretty well, but and the point is, so they're collecting tips. The festival takes 50% of their tips. Apparently that has changed this year, which I'm glad to hear, mm-hmm. but the festival took 50% of their tips and they had a ceiling of $100. So even if they took enough tips for everybody, for the mermaids in the cove to make over $100, they could not. The most they could make in a day was $100. And the festival's argument was basically, well, we're providing you the space. We provide you the tank that you swim in, which was cheap, and they paid it off years ago.
Mm-hmm. The mermaids have to buy their own tails.
They have to provide their own costumes. Everybody at
tails
the festival.
Are expensive.
Tails are thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Everybody at the festival provides their own costumes.
A mermaid said on that same thread that I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, the festival took $10,000 in tips from the mermaids over the course of a season.
$10,000.
Now, that's Now, that doesn't mean that the mermaids took home $10,000 because, as Tim said, there's a $100 cap.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's also a ton of mermaids.
And it's right. And it's split so many different ways that $10,000 might sound impressive on the other side of that. But really, everything about that situation is stacked against the performer. And every corner that can be cut that's their corner or their bit of income gets that's where the cut gets made.
Right.
And so the thing is, you might be thinking, oh, well, they must get paid pretty significantly for them to take these sorts of tips away and everything else. And it's just not true. When I say prison wages, I mean 70 to 75% of the people I saw on that thread make less than $2 an hour.
None of the mermaids are paid enough to pay for their tail.
Yeah. The thing is, like, so there are people, there was someone who said that she worked for 12 years on a volunteer contract, which means she was paid $0.
As a professional dancer.
As a professional
dancer. Who provides her own costume.
Who did 4 to 5 shows a day and who, on top of that, was expected to, you know, you were there for 12 hours. It's a 12-hour day because you have to be there at 8 a.m. for cast call. And you are there until 7:30, which means for the majority of us, that's a getting ready time of 7:45 to 7:45.
And the traffic's so bad and all that, you can't even really leave until 8:30.
And then 9. You got to get on a dusty bus and ride all the way out to where the participant parking is, which is further than...
It's a mile and a half
audience
of walking.
Parking.
A children's school bus that is not... designed to accommodate king-size adults.
Or people in hoop skirts.
And not air-conditioned after a long, hot day. You have to get into a hotter bus.
And the bus drivers go so fast sometimes that I've had to complain because the bus driver has driven so insanely fast that people on the bus were screaming. I'm 50, not exaggerating.
50 miles an hour through a rocky quarry.
Down those curves.
Where the speed limit is 5 miles an hour.
Yeah. Anyway.
There's a lot of reasons.
And, you know, we're kind of getting this out. This is podcast therapy. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We will be billing ourselves $100 an hour.
There are a lot of great things about working out at the festival.
Yes.
And a lot of great people.
And it is that question of when does the toxicity reach a point? And honestly, what I've always said to people is, like, when you reach a point where you need to quit, don't wait 2 years.
No.
You know, because then you won't be able to remember all the great things.
Yes.
Right.
And there are tons of good things. I mean, again, I described it as euphoric. The experience, you know, when we have a great drag show or a great Vill show and you just walk off stage and you're like, we fucking owned it.
Yeah.
You just like, oh, that was such a great moment.
There's been the end of amazing days where I have just cried. Cried why? Just because I was saying goodbye to people I didn't even talk to that day, just waving goodbye to strangers, standing on the top of a wooden castle that I have, like, dreamed about since I was a small child. Like, there's a lot of magic there, but the thing is, the majority of the magic comes from the audience. It's the patrons who bring it in with them. It's them dressed up. It's them excited. It's them even drunk and, you know, swearing and maybe even just being, like, way too drunk. But at the same time, like, they're still having a magical time. And, like, they're going to tell the story about the time they got way too drunk at the Renaissance Festival.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, this past year, I mean, for me, just the fact we had a patron who has been coming to see the dregs for years, and he passed away from cancer, and his wife asked the dregs to perform at the funeral. And you know how, I mean, that's just like, really? You know, that we got asked to perform at this funeral for a guy who'd just been coming to watch us sing dirty songs for the last 15 years.
I've done weddings. I've met people. Some people got engaged.
Yeah.
On, like, wine things. Like,
at our shows.
At our shows, there have been...
The dregs have been part of parts of proposals. Yep. Yeah. You know, it's just been like...
It's a beautiful and wonderful place, and I can't stay because I will become that person who is infecting other people with my... Bitterness isn't the right word.
Cynicism.
Yeah.
And if there are people for whom that magic of working out there is still there, and for people who they still have that energy and they still want to do that, all I can do is say, please don't be exploited. Please try to fight together. But the thing is, someone's always... This is the thing about America. This is an American problem. Someone is always willing to be exploited to do the job.
Because we always say, if once you find what you love, do it and don't worry about.
It doesn't even matter about, and this is something you love. It doesn't even matter what job. There's always someone willing to do it. That's the reason that when people complain about, immigrants taking our jobs, it's like, it's because they're willing to do a job you won't do. It's because people are here and they're willing to do a job you won't do for a cost you won't do it at. And there's someone who doesn't have the moral, you know, problem with paying what no one is worth, you know, paying too little.
There's always someone ready to be exploited by the owner of the festival to work for free or in awful conditions.
Right.
And what we run into
illegal conditions.
Yeah. Yes.
And what we run into in this conversation and in talking to people who may come out to the Renaissance Festival, and I've seen people like, well, should I boycott the festival? And my answer is no. I don't think you should. If it is something that gives you joy, you absolutely should not. But what you need to understand is what you're supporting. And the crafters out there, that's the way they get their money. But the crafters out there are exploited as well.
Uh-huh.
They have to they have to pay for those shops themselves, but they don't really own them.
No.
The festival,
but they have to upkeep them, and they have to get them to meet code.
We have to do that with our stages.
Yeah, the festival can kick them out.
Yep.
If they don't meet certain standards, and then the festival owns their booth. The few people out there that run their own food booths, if they leave the festival, they can't sell that food booth to somebody else before the festival has a chance to buy it for less money.
Yep.
And then produce a worse quality product for more money.
The food booth people. So if you're going to the festival and you're planning on buying food, you can, before you go in, you can buy a food book that saves you a couple bucks. It's like buying itchy and scratchy fun bucks for food. Not good for alcohol. They also give the food books to participants as an kind of an alternative to payment or incentive for things. And that's a whole other problem. But when you use a food book at... like a turkey leg booth.
Something that the festival owns.
All $6 of that food book are 100% $6 that goes to the festival. When you take that food book and go to your favorite restaurant, the Royal Asian Foods.
An independent booth.
Who are an independent booth that's not owned by the festival, and you pay with a food book. When they turn around and take that food book and give it to the festival to get redeemed for money, they only get,
I don't know what the number 75%. Is, but they don't get the
once
full
again,
amount.
Once again, they're not reimbursed the one. The
they're
full
not
amount.
Reimbursed
right.
the full amount.
They're not reimbursed the full
so
amount.
So they lose money on
so
that.
So they number. Lose money. It's just like every way that they're, every point at which there's a calculation, they always round down in the festival's favor.
And what's even harder for the artisans especially is... You know, the crafters and the artisans is people will look at their stuff and say it's not worth what it's cost, what it costs,
yeah.
because they can get it cheaper. They can get something like it cheaper somewhere else. And so a lot of people, you know, don't. There's also a lot of theft that happens at the Renaissance Festival just because of the nature of the open area and how easy it is to take something and disappear. But honestly, like a big problem. I mean, I before I worked out there. You know, I very rarely bought anything at the Renaissance Festival because I was one of those people that was like, oh, wow, $30 for this wand thing? Like, I mean, it's cool and I'll use it while I'm here, but how often am I here? And so much of, like, the crafters are told to, like, make their stuff more tailored to the audience that's there. But then at the same time, you know, it's like stuff that you would only wear when you're there.
Right.
So it's this super like Ouroboros of making
sunk it cost.
It is, yeah. It's, and I love it there, and I'm really excited for this year. And I don't want anyone to think that if you see us this year, we're sad, or we're angry, or anything like that. We are all those things, but Beefcake and Olive aren't. We just live there. We live there. Beefcake and Olive and Thomas, we live in this village. This is just our village. This is Nick and Molly and Tim talking right now. Yeah. And it's different.
I'm going to have a great time.
Yeah.
I think, you know, people who go out there, you know, as Nick was talking about with the food, if you have food books, I would ask when you get to the front of the line if they're an independent food booth. And if they say yes, pay them cash.
Or give them an extra dollar out of your food
book. Or
that can help too.
Pay them extra. That's what. Yep. That's the other thing.
That's what we do. We round up with food books.
Yep.
And you know, if you go into a crafter shop, don't tell them their stuff's too expensive because it's not. You don't fucking know.
It's
you didn't make it.
If you want to keep going to the festival and you want to support the people and the places you love
and try to help
without
change,
without supporting the bad parts so much, what are things people can do? They can bring cash for tipping. That's always great. They can eat beforehand and bring a bottle of water with them.
Things you may not know. You can bring sealed bottles of water and Gatorade into the festival. They won't turn those away at the gates as long as
because
they're sealed.
Because hydration.
Yep, as long as they're sealed.
There are drinking fountains inside the festival that you can refill those bottles at if you bring in an empty one.
It's not as easy with the way parking is now, but if you get there very early and you park at Kingsgate and you can actually get to your car, there is the ability to tailgate out of your car. When Nick and I were season pass holders, we would bring food and keep it in a cooler in our car. And then midday, we'd go out to our car and eat and then we'd have a few beers. And then we'd go back in.
Now, I'm also going to say, if you go to the Renaissance Festival and you like having a turkey leg, I'm not going to tell you not to have
one. Who doesn't like
having a tradition.
Turkey leg?
I hate those things. And we eat one a year.
My mom.
They're awful.
It's tradition. My mom, Nick's mom, they both love the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah.
And they've been taking us since we were kids. And we talked about this. And they both were like, no, I mean, it's just one of those things. You're going to go to the Renaissance Festival and it's going to be a couple $100s. Like they just understand that. That's just how it is. And so I'm sure for a lot of people, that's just how it is, especially people who listen to our show, because I know we have a lot of people who are single or like me and Nick, double income, no kids, or who have, our high paying jobs because we're nerds and we just tend to have those, or you save up all year, or you are irresponsible with money, whatever it is. you go.
I'm all of those things.
Yeah. You are not double income, no kids. I've seen your kids.
It's true.
But you go and you're fine with that. And that's great. And it's super good. I think the best thing you can do is write positive letters about how much the entertainers matter to you.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't write negative letters about who's not there.
No, that's not going to help. But if you write positive letters about the entertainers you saw that you loved, that can help them get paid more next year. Like if people, that's the thing is like there's this saying that you get paid this year for the work you did last year.
Yeah.
And it's very true. And the thing is, if people love you, you're more likely to get to, you're giving your entertainers that you love a better leverage, a better bargaining chip to be able to make more money next year. And the whole point of this is, if you think that the people who work out there should be making minimum wage, write to them and say that. If you believe that, tell them that.
Darn straight.
There's things that you can say that can help, but at the same time, that what doesn't help is, bitching about the parking, because the way the owner sees it, the parking is going to change, so he doesn't care.
Even though, from what we understand about the new site, it's not going to change.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be in a fracking pit.
Right.
Yeah.
There won't be a quarry, but everything else will be about the same.
You'll still get stuck in the mud, though.
Probably, because it'll probably just be grass.
Yeah.
Right.
So, anyway...
Yay!
I know that this sucks because usually we have such a positive, we're so looking forward
to everything.
We're super
cheery people.
But it's been a really rough year.
It has been a tough year. And the thing is that we are going to go out there and we're going to kick ass.
So we really are.
Come on and see us. Bill is going to be a fucking amazing show this year.
We're going to bring it so hard.
The last day is going to be insane.
So
I
instead
guarantee
of the
it.
Instead of the Let's Get Fired show, what are we calling it?
We're calling it the You Can't Fire Us, We Quit show. And...
just in case people don't know, what is the Let's Get Fired show?
It's our final day show where we go up there and we say, all right, we're going to break all the rules that we have when we perform out here because we are supposed to keep the show PG-13. Yep. And we go further.
And it's little things, too. It's like we're not supposed to smoke on stage. So
and
sometimes
somebody will
people come out
with
and smoke
a cigarette.
And we're not supposed to show our butts. And last year I mooned the whole audience. Like it's things. Yeah.
But this year we're going to dial it up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to die because it will be.
Will you fire us?
It will be our last show.
So Sunday, September 30th at
the Minnesota
12:30
Renaissance
p.m.
Festival.
Get there by 11:30 a.m., honestly, if you want to see.
I think so.
Because we're telling people all year. And this isn't something that's going to get reversed.
No.
Even if the festival
people
came.
People keep saying, oh, you'll be back.
We crossed that Rubicon.
Even if the festival came to me in the off season and was like, what would we have to pay you to have you come back? The number that I would quote them is nowhere near the number they would ever pay us. So, I will tell you, there's a number at which point I would go to everybody and say, hey, you want to drive in to do one show a day? That number is
So much.
Unreasonably high.
Yeah.
Even by my perspective of what unreasonable is.
To come back, not only would they have to pay us so much, but also there'd be so many changes I would require to the general working conditions of the place that it wouldn't just be the cost to get us. It would be the cost to improve things enough to where it would be tolerable.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. For us at least.
A lot of you probably know someone who works at the Renaissance Festival, whether they work in games or in a crafter shop or as a CKC kid.
JC.
Or they're a JC or they're an entertainer, whatever. Maybe they work parking. You probably, if you live in Minnesota, you probably know someone who works at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. This is my advice. Give that person a hug. And tell them that you really appreciate them and that you understand it's hard, but that you appreciate what they do. Because honestly, that can go a really long way for a lot of people who haven't been feeling that way lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we got to get to five questions.
You know,
before we read the five questions, I got to point out, we only have two left in the hopper for our current set of five questions.
Yeah.
And we feel like it's time, you know, things have been slowing down. So
for a new five questions.
A new five questions, but what we've decided to do.
Ooh.
Oh.
Is a new five questions every time. What does that mean, Molly?
It means that what we need you to do is when you write in to fivequestions@geekswithoutgod.com, you are going to ask us, Nick, Molly, and Tim, five questions of your own. We will answer anything.
Damn,
I'm just
going
to say that. We will answer anything.
Yeah.
And ask
it
us,
might not be a direct answer. It might be, not
might
be the
not
answer
be
you
truth,
want.
But
it can be geeky. It can be godless.
Yep.
It can be comedy. It can be whatever the fuck.
It's going to be
whatever
you want to know about us. But you send us your five questions, and we will give you our three answers. 15 answers, I guess, technically.
Our answers.
Our answers to your questions.
On the air.
Yep. Any questions you want. So start sending those in right now.
And you can send them in more than once if you have a different set of five questions.
That's the beauty of this.
And if you're a Patreon supporter, you still get bumped to the top.
You absolutely do. So please make sure you say Patreon supporter in your subject.
Who's going to be first? Yeah.
Our penultimate five answers
come
from Jen Paulus.
Hi, Jen.
Jen Paulus is awesome. She and I used to work together, and she is a geek who goes to Convergence, and she is wonderful.
Well, Jen, it's good to hear from you. So question number one, Jen, what conspiracy theory do you find the most interesting or compelling?
I find celebrity death conspiracy theories to be fascinating. For example, Tupac Shakur faked his own death and is now living in Cuba. Or Natalie Wood was murdered because she found her husband and Christopher Walken in bed together.
Oh, no, I believe that one.
And also murder conspiracies, like the whole Amanda Knox murdered her roommate because of sex and Satan stuff. Yeah. No, I'm all about, I love any death conspiracies.
Also like the Paul McCartney is dead because of, because of the weird
Abbey
thing
Road
at the
cover.
End of Strawberry Fields.
And he's the only one barefoot on the cover of Abbey Road.
And they bury a barefoot dead or whatever.
Yeah.
My favorite is Avril Lavigne died and she's been replaced by a lookalike clone girl named Melissa.
That's a really popular
like,
one.
It's
good one.
So ridiculous and great. Question number two, what is your perfect 2-week vacation? Cost is no object, but physics is.
I'm not sure if this would be my perfect 2-week vacation, but it popped into my head as a fun idea, so let's go with it. Traveling the world to meet and have lunch with as many of my favorite authors as I could physically see, and I'm assuming bribe, in 2 weeks.
Well, money's no object, so
money's
it shouldn't
no
be
object.
A problem.
I mean, how much could it cost to have lunch with Stephen King, Molly wondered to herself.
Probably, I mean, but he's got money. Most authors don't get paid much, so it'd be pretty easy. It's like
he's got a ton of money, though.
I would give you $200.
He owns two radio stations.
I know, yeah.
You'd have to bribe him with some classic rock memorabilia or something.
Stephen King's going doing all right.
Some cocaine.
But money's no object. You say you're fine.
Yeah.
Question number three, what is a movie or book that changed your life and how or why?
Pawn of Prophecy by David Eddings.
God damn it.
He's only mad it was a book, Jen.
Yeah.
It was the first of many fantasy novels I began reading in my youth, and it contributed to my love of reading and writing. Ooh, Pawn of Prophecy. I haven't heard of that one.
I have. I've read that's the Belgariad series.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Everybody keeps talking. Everyone talks about them so much, and I'm only vaguely familiar with the series. Question number four. What's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
I've been a maid of honor 3 times for nerdy friends and family and have done 3 nerdy bachelorette parties. I planned a Doctor Who-themed brewery crawl for my sister. She had been replaced by a Dalek. My brother-in-law apparently couldn't tell the difference and had to perform certain activities like juggling in a bar to save her wedding day.
Nice.
I planned a Star Trek-themed party for a friend that involved each member having an encounter with a crew member at each location we went to. They drew from a bag and opened an envelope that had a picture and short message from the crew member they encountered. And finally, I planned a Firefly-themed one for a friend where we were hired by Badger to finish a diamond heist gone wrong and turned a map of Minneapolis into one of the planets from the show.
That's awesome.
Holy shit.
That's pretty cool.
I need to get married again and make Jen one of my maids of honor.
Jen needs to be an event planner. And also, yeah, hey, no wait, kidding. Get married again. Hang on now.
I bet the Firefly one ended prematurely, though. So
if I was going to get married again, it would be to you, dummy.
Oh,
that's sweet.
What would you do? What theme?
What
Stephen
theme?
King themed?
I would do a Stephen King themed. Anything Stephen King. I would love that for all of it.
At the very last stop, you get a crown put on your head and then they dump blood on you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's dairy and everything about the party goes wrong. Like my regular bachelorette party.
Only intentional this time.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, awesome. Question number 5. What is your favorite hangover cure?
A shot of pickle juice.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I've never tried it, but it sounds both interesting and horrifying.
I love pickle juice.
I would definitely not recommend eating salt and vinegar almonds as a cure, for what that's worth.
Salt and vinegar almonds?
They're delicious. Jen has empirical evidence about salt and vinegar almonds.
They are delicious, just not when you're
hungover. Probably not as a hangover cure.
So right, here's the thing about pickle juice, right?
Yeah. So Jen, listen up.
It's got salt.
Yep.
It's got electrolytes, which are just it's just another way of saying salt.
Yeah.
It's got a good shocking flavor that'll like kill or cure. I think like if you're super drunk and hungover, you're gonna drink pickle juice, and one of two things is gonna happen. Either it's gonna wake you up a little and then jar you back into alignment with the universe, or it's gonna push you over the edge and make you throw up. But throwing up is going to make you feel so much better.
It's true. As long as you drink water after, you'll be a lot
right?
better.
Right? I think,
you've heard of pickleback shots, right?
What?
People, you never heard of a pickleback.
No.
So a pickleback is a thing that...
is that band that sucks?
Yeah. When you get a beer, so like sometimes if you get a beer, you can get a pickleback, which is like a shot of pickle juice that you drink.
Like a beer back, but it's pickle juice.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so, or you can do it with shots too. Like, and so I think that there's probably something science in there about the fact that you are drinking salt and a little bit of water.
Sure. There's probably something folk medicine-y, at least.
Folk medicine is basically just, the hippie science of our day.
Well, anyway, thank you, Jen, for your answers. As I said, we only have one more set of answers, and then you can start sending us 5 questions. You can be very excited about it. You can just shoot them on over to us. Any 5 questions, we will answer. If you are a Patreon supporter, as some of you are, and we really appreciate it, you can get bumped to the top of the queue. So we'll answer your questions first. So if you have burning questions, you've been listening to us for 5 years, and you're like, they have never answered this question for me. If you're a Patreon supporter, we'll answer it sooner. You'll also get this episode sooner, so you'll know to send in your 5 questions
boom
earlier than other people did.
Yeah.
Dan Scarup, we're coming for you.
You know what? I'm gonna do something fun. The first set of questions we get from someone, we'll like send them a sticker.
Hot damn.
How about that?
Sticker for the first set of questions.
Sticker for the first set
Start
of questions.
Start the race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I mean, like, a Patreon supporter has a benefit.
Well,
there.
So is it going to be the first person who sends it in or the first person who gets read?
First person to send it in.
First email I get.
Okay.
First email I get, because then it's time-stamped.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
That sounds
That's
good.
Nice and easy.
So, thank you for listening. We are going to catch you next week. Please come out and see us at the Renaissance Festival.
Please, it's our last year. We want to see you.
And we're really just telling these stories because, there's sort of a conspiracy of silence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Around all of
this.
It's
a really good point.
And at some point, we need to talk about it because whether or not Nick and Molly and I are out there, there will be people out there, and we are trying to make it better for those people.
Yeah.
It's not about you not coming to the festival.
Right.
It is about fighting to make the festival treat the people who actually make the festival what it is, to make that experience, what it is, be compensated and treated better. And also to have you as audience members treated better, because honestly, you as audience members deserve better.
Yeah. Pinus cartata. Sometimes you have to burn everything down to be able to grow again.
Jack Pines. Mm-hmm.
So thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.
Burn it down!
Don't burn it down.
Three cheers for the king. Hip hip.
Fuck off!
Who?
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
See, I put that in there, so if it does burn down, they can't say it was us.